But we've all been on the internet, and not everything that catches your eye is actually pleasant to look at, right? So there's things... Well, you know what I mean, right? So, but if you're going to go, well, these guys seem reasonable and they can turn it around really quick, it's because they're not spending 3 hours adjusting all this stuff. Oh, it's going to sound really bad, right? But I think it's almost like the expectations are too high. Yeah, it's like it's a flyer, yeah? No one is going to kind of be walking down the road and go like, yeah? Whoa! Like, it's, the world is not like that. And it's even if it was, it's not like that anymore.
Hello, and welcome to Well, You're the Designer, the podcast where the unstoppable force of graphic design meets the immovable object of client feedback. I'm your host, Danny Powell. I'm joined by Richard Kemp.
Hello.
And Matt Brutti.
Hello.
A pair of grassroots graphic designers who bring years of experience in the trenches of fast turnaround work where the briefs are brief and the budgets are budget. We're not talking about global brands or endless mood boards. We're talking about real-world design work where every second, every penny and every pixel counts. As a long-time client-side marketer and non-graphic designer, I'm here to make sense of their creative carping and make sure they remember who's paying for this bloody job anyway. In each episode, we'll delve into a common client request and dissect it by asking various questions, including what's the client trying to achieve and could they achieve it a different way? Do they have a point? Things like that. And at the end, we'll have a clangometer, a score from 1 to 10, where we assess whether that was a reasonable request or a client clanger. So let's get to it. Today's topic is make it pop. Rich and Matt, are you often asked to make it pop?
Actually, probably not as much as the, you know, because that's quite a, not cliche, but that's a very, you know, common thing to moan about for graphic designers, to make it pop request. Mm. So I think I get it more as like, you know, I guess the make it stand out.
Yeah.
Which to me is slightly different, but it's.
Mm. Yeah, I suppose what does make it pop mean? But I don't hear it much. But then I think. It depends when someone's asking you to make it pop. Mm. Have they just seen their first brief? Have they seen the first proof? Or are they asking you to make it pop before you've even designed it?
Yeah.
I think there's a difference. Because if you're getting that response to a proof, then you probably haven't done the job right.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, obviously, if you get... Well, I mean, I don't know. I'd say maybe, but I think... If you've sent a proof and they say, are you talking about like the whole thing or just like an element?
The whole thing? I mean, I suppose we should define what does that mean? What does it mean when people say make it pop? I always think, you know, everything that makes good design, like light and shade, good use of space,
my interpretation of it is that they want it to... essentially be more vibrant and brighter.
Impactful. All right, okay.
Yeah, impactful is probably an all right way of putting it.
Yeah.
That's how I see it.
I don't think it necessarily means more colourful or anything like that.
No, I wouldn't say adding more colours, but the colours in there should be brighter.
Right, okay.
Because that, to me, like when something like pop, although it's fairly small, it's got a bit of an explosive feel to it, right? So like that bang, that pop.
I sort of think of it the same thing as like what I call t-shirt factor, you know, it's sort of, it just stands out, it's impactful.
What, as in, so the t-shirt factor is it would look good on a t-shirt?
Yeah, like, is that? Yeah, t-shirts often aren't trying to be subtle, are they, really? That's what I always think of anyway, because I used to design t-shirts, that's why.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but...
I guess there's a difference, though, being asked make the whole design pop, or can you make that headline pop, or that logo, or that image?
Yeah, but and then again, you know, if that's a response to a design that's been given to a customer, then again, you probably haven't. If you're trying to get the right hierarchy, you probably haven't done your job right. Mm. I think.
On a 2D element, are they asking...
I just want to say I disagree with Matt Brutti.
Okay, go on.
I don't think... Because I think you could use that same argument for any feedback, right? to me, it feels a bit like saying if you get any feedback, it means you haven't done your job right. Because getting your job right is you doing a thing and they go and love it and signing it off straight away.
Yeah.
Whereas I, you know, that means that both me and you pretty much fail at 90% of the jobs we do, right? Because it's very rare, isn't it? You get that sign off straight away. It is rare. Yeah.
I
know it's been a while since you've done
but it's still... Okay, it's going to sound big-headed, but when I do a lot more of the customer stuff, usually I'd get pretty much there first time.
Yeah, and I get pretty much there.
But it's honest, like, that's what
yeah, you get pretty much there, but by your evaluation... The way I'm choosing to interpret it is that
I can't make it come across.
If you good. Basically, if there's something to change, it means you, which I know technically is true.
Yeah.
But I just think, you know, make it pop. It means you haven't caught their attention with it. But again, I think it's still more down to, I think the customer is, and I would say maybe incorrectly, trying to create something that they find really appealing. Whereas I don't think that's always the right, I think you have to be a bit more kind of logical about it, or, you know, like less emotive about it and go, okay, it might not be what I find massively impactful and appealing, but who are you selling it to? So if you're selling something to, say, like children, right, you're starting some sort of, I don't know, games club or something like that, right, or sports club, and you're aiming this particular class at children, it's no good making it how you would want it to be because you're not a child. At least I hope you're not, because why are you running a martial arts class? So if you're, think of it like that, you've got to think, who is it aimed at and what do they find impactful? And, you know, do they need to make it pop? So you could argue for something aimed at children, you should do, right? Because it's all bright colours and that sort of stuff, or maybe a bit more garish than you would do. But if you're doing, I don't know, your exclusive line of handbags, right, for classy ladies about town, then it's not about making it pop, is it? It's about making it graceful and elegant and fashionable.
Yeah, there's that. And I think the other thing is
when... Did you like the handbag one?
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
cool. We'll add that to the list. But the you know, the when someone does ask for something to pop, but then they've asked you to do it at the same time as giving you reams of copy, loads of pictures, you know, too much stuff for whatever the design's
going on, then you
can't make it pop because you've got too much stuff on there.
You need
and we always bang on about it, you need that space,
you need that space,
room for your eye to move around, rest, pick up something else.
Yeah.
Pop space.
Yeah.
But when I hear that term, make it pop, what my mind goes to is making something 2D a bit more 3D. So if it were a
they normally print, will be like, oh, can you make it pop by putting a drop shadow on it?
Yeah.
Or like 3D or lettering or...
But that's interesting, isn't it? Because we've each got a different view of what that means, make it pop. Yeah.
So whether it's bright colours or different dimensions and depth, I suppose.
I mean, depth, you should always try and put some, you know, some depth into like your designs. Because, because flat things don't pop, do they?
Well, you get those, I'm thinking about those like... Dayglow rave posters where it's just where they're like green orange with black writing. I mean, you couldn't be more 2D, but I guess they do. Yeah, but I guess they do that to draw the eye.
It's like that color, isn't it? It's like,
what do you mean with depth? You want an actual 3D effect?
Not, I wouldn't say not like a 3D effect, but it's, you know, it is always pleasing to have. To give the impression that, you know, some things are on top of other things, right? That there is like layers to a design. So if you've got, I don't know, maybe a headline and then you've got, so it's a karate club, right? So you've got the karate club headline, and then you've got a photo, you know, someone cut out doing some like mad move or kick or something. And then if you have a bit of the foot or the punching arm going over the headline,
right?
Yeah,
then you get that. It hasn't got to be a lot, just a bit.
Yeah,
just the right amount, you know. And it can add something to the design because you've got that depth, you know. And you know, like line work as well, it can go over the top of some things and under other things and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it'll give you that sense of depth without actually resorting to, you know, essentially, you know, like 3D bevels and drop shadows and things like that.
No, you're right. It does really take the eye.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Yeah, in a good way, yeah.
I guess that means you have to consider hierarchy because, you know, not everything can pop louder than everything else.
Well, exactly.
Kind of everything louder than everything else, like Motorhead.
So, so I think some people, again, would probably go, oh, you make it pop by, you know, making it bigger, making everything big. But, you know, cacophonies don't really pop, do they? They just kind of...
Noise.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, a cymbal crash at the end of a, you know, crescendo or something, right? Then that'll pop or, you know... So in music, you know, when something breaks down and one instrument comes over louder than everything else, you know, then that instrument will pop. Whereas if you do it Phil Spector style.
Wall of sound.
The wall of sound, exactly. Mm. You know, I mean, to be fair, it's fairly pleasant to listen to, but nothing really, it doesn't pop, does it?
No. So one thing we often ask is, what are the consequences to the design of following this amend that you've received, make it pop? So what are the positives and negatives that can happen when you try and implement that?
It would often mean, similar to when we spoke about logos having to be bigger, you'd something else to get that sort of light and shade and make certain things pop, something else has to sort of take a back seat, you know, or go smaller or do. After, I think that would be the consequence, I think, for me, because you're just trying to create a more visual impact.
So should the client be aware that, you know, you gain somewhere, you lose somewhere?
Yeah, and I think with experience, you could, you know, say that right from the start. You know, if you can see like too much text, the web is going to be an issue for this design. Mm. It's best to get in there first,
and then if you're kind of up in the saturation in colours or the brightness as well, you can get some like fairly, you know, it can just end up looking, you know, like garish, basically, you know, and like a little bit clashy and that sort of thing. So, which doesn't necessarily, it's kind of like that thing between, you know, like eye-catching. It's like plenty of things can catch your eye, but we've all been on the internet and not everything that catches your eye is actually pleasant to look at, right? So there's things...
What?
Well, you know what I mean, right? So, you know, someone lying on the floor with a severed leg, right, and blood going everywhere, to be really extreme, just to make the point, is eye-catching, right? You go like, my God, what's that?
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean you want to look at it. It's not nice to look at. Mm-hmm. You don't go, oh, brilliant, severed leg.
Right,
I'm
not
sending my kids to that karate.
Well, it is run by a child, to be fair. So there's like, so you're right. So if you can, like, sure, we can make all the colours brighter and it will make someone go like, what's that? Yeah, but like a bad shirt, people can look at it and go, it's certainly eye-catching. Bad shirt probably would have been a better example than horrific leg injury.
Yeah.
So imagine a bad shirt.
Yeah.
So it's eye-catching.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean it's nice.
Different.
Yeah, but different doesn't mean nice either. It just means
different. Yeah, I know. Polite way of saying it. I think
it's a bit like that. Sure, you can make, you know, you can put your drop shadows on and you can put your thing and, technically, it pops, but does it look good? It's not always the same.
Yeah.
Yes, like with colours, sort of 9 times out of 10, a limited colour palette, if not more.
Yeah.
A limited colour palette's the way to go, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Sometimes sort of clashing colours are deliberately used right next to each other. They make your eyeballs shake, don't they?
Mm.
Yeah.
But again, it has to, like you say, you know, for a club night, like rave poster, that makes more sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, like with anything we discuss, I'm probably going to say this like at least twice every episode, but with anything we discuss, you can always say, oh, there's this rule and there's this rule and you shouldn't do this and you shouldn't do that. But what you can actually do is go, well, you shouldn't do that because of this. So you can actually use that kind of incorrectness to create an effect. And in some designs, that effect will be what you want. So one of the examples would be text too close to the edge because it creates tension and stuff like that. So if you're doing something, say it's a play and it's like a thriller, yeah, then you want to create tension. So you would start doing things that maybe you wouldn't if you were doing some like luxury item packaging because, you know, they're different, so they need different responses. So you can learn what doesn't work on some things, yeah, some briefs. You can then use that to actually fulfill a different brief because you go, oh, this looks terrible for this brief because it has this effect. And then later on you go, oh, we need something that creates that effect. So, you know, having the text, you know, like, so having like terrible font choices, you know, really clashing fonts. Again, if you're doing something, maybe you're doing a, I don't know, like a book cover and the main, you know, and it's in first person and the main character's, you know, a very unreliable narrator and they're, you know, but they're naive and young and stuff like that. You could use all those terrible clashing, you know, like free fonts to create quite an effective cover that will actually portray the mindset of the
And you often have to exaggerate it to make it. If you're going to make one of those deliberate sort of mistakes, it's best to exaggerate to make it
clear that
you're in control. I'm in control of this. I know.
Sorry for all my coughing, by the way. I've been coughing for 3 weeks apparently.
Yeah, 3 weeks of coughing, man. You go to the doctor, right?
So when you get that feedback, what's in your toolkit then? What can you do to try and appease that piece of feedback?
Firstly, apologise, you know, sorry. I didn't make it pop. I think it's that. I think it's having to move stuff around, draw the eye to certain places, just get a bit more drama going on.
I would try and determine what they mean by that.
And that as well, yeah.
Then whatever I did, I would do it. So say I was right, and it was about vibrancy and colour, I would, you know, up the ante on those areas, but I would do it as little as, you know, as little as I could to reach the result the customer's happy with. So I wouldn't go straight to maximum. I'd be like, oh, okay, you know, so it looks, so they can see that I've done what they've asked, but I haven't gone too far, basically. Even though they might go, oh, actually, it's, so if I sent them, say, one at 10% more, one at 20% more, one at 30% more, they'd probably choose a 30% more.
Yeah.
Whereas in reality, the 10% more would satisfy them and look better. So I would just do the 10% and send them that. And they can see that I've taken their feedback on board. I've done what they've asked. And because it's an improvement on the previous one, they'd accept it. So I guess
that's an interesting strategy,
We live in a world where we're surrounded by marketing, don't we? They call it the attention economy, don't they? So
do they?
Yeah, I who's think they? So. I think especially online ads, but you could just as easily apply to it to, you know, walking around a town centre. Everything's competing for your eye, isn't it? So do you think clients can be forgiven for wanting something that's almost shocking?
Shocking. Yeah, I mean, but it's that thing again, isn't it? If everything pops, then nothing pops. So if you're,
you're in a world of pops, though, aren't
you? There are no pops. Exactly. So again, if everything else is popping, the way you stand out is by not popping.
So an understanding of context is
Of course.
But have you ever had a customer say that? Have you ever had a customer say, listen, I don't want it to stand out. I don't want it to take the eye.
But
be a brave choice, wouldn't it?
No, because they wouldn't put it like that. But they would say, oh, you know, we're in this industry and everything in this industry looks like that. So we want to do something different.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
They wouldn't say, oh, can you make it uninteresting?
Yeah.
So I think you're right. And you know, there has been a, you know, like a shift, you know, like some of these kind of modern colors that are, you know, for starters, very based in RGB color space, aren't they? Like the blues and the greens, and like there's kind of, you know, this popular, I guess, kind of like a lilac and stuff at the moment,
right?
So, you know, you've got all those which are great for screen, but obviously in print they're just not going to work. And I've seen that a few times where people have built their whole visual ID around RGB color spaces, and then they order some print, and obviously they're massively disappointed because it comes, especially like this kind of, you know, like lilac that seems to be quite popular at the moment, that really does wash out really badly in CMYK. And it's not even like, at least with the fluoro colours, you can get the stock or you can get a Pantone. If you've got the money and the means, you can recreate that in print.
Yeah.
But these colours are just so based on light being the primary source of the colour that you're just, you couldn't create a, I mean, maybe they will, might be like the opposite. You know, that black that doesn't reflect any light. Yeah. Maybe they'll invent one that somehow can use direct light source or something. But yeah, so I think with the popping thing and trying to get, you know, in the saturated kind of, what was it, attention economy?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, I think if you're leaving the poppiness of your design to do that much heavy lifting, then... Yeah. You're not gonna succeed anyway, because it's not, we're not in the 1950s anymore, when essentially consumerism has only been around for what, you know, in its kind of, you know, modern consumerism has only been around what, 5-10 years, something like that.
Post-war, yeah.
So everything's just like, you know, here's the thing, it's brilliant, and Mary likes it, and everyone goes, oh yeah, let's go and get it.
Yeah.
So people are just almost cynical about it now, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So, like, you cannot just rely on, like, everything's bright and there's a smiley person holding the toaster, right? So everyone's going to buy the toaster, because it just doesn't work like that anymore, which is why it's all about, you know, like branding and all that, which I kind of do get and do enjoy. But for me, what I love about graphic design is the fundamentals. I just like shapes and colours and composition. And that's what I find pleasing. Yeah, that is what I find pleasing. And, you know, together with some, like, intelligent copy, you know, is just the icing on the cake. Yeah? So all the other stuff where they're... And I think even with branding, it's difficult now because, so say, like, for the things that make me roll my eyes the most are, like, bank adverts on TV, yeah, where it's all, you know, people... drinking a cup of tea with their diverse neighbours, and, you know, children helping old people do some modern thing, right? And then the bank's all like, oh, we're all just friends, aren't we? And we're your friend. We're always here for you. And it's just like, that's the opposite of what you are, pretty much. Yeah, you're here to just siphon as much money as you possibly can out of everyone and keep it for yourself, right? So it's like, I think people are just generally, I think it's a lot harder now to create a brand that people will see as genuine, because, you know, it's, I think, yeah, people have just been around it now. Even the whole, because that was obviously, I think, the step forward from just, you know, look at these guys, they've got the thing, they love the thing, buy the thing. Yeah. So now that evolved, didn't it, into like the kind of brand. So it's just like, hey, you know. We're not like the other guys. We're all like, we're cool and friendly and we're doing this for the right reasons. But, you know, I'm not saying every company, but most of the big ones, obviously they aren't. That's why they're big companies.
So there's popping that occurs via a graphic approach, but also contents, concepts. Yeah. They can shake you out of what you're thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you think that's more effective than... a drop shadow.
Again, I mean, like, a lot of things are more effective than a drop shadow in this day and age. I'm sure 1967 probably would have turned the world upside down. But I think now, yeah, sure. And again, I think society in general has become despite or maybe because of, you know, the internet and the whole globalization thing, more fragmented and more niche, because everything's kind of, you know, so how many genres of heavy metal are there? Whereas heavy metal just used to be a genre of rock, which was a genre of music, but now there's what, like, I don't know, there's probably like 15 different. Yeah, so everything's getting more and more niche. So it's harder and harder to appeal to a lot of people at once. So as far as popping goes, again, it's all about context and who you're aiming it at. Because, you know, it's different for everyone, right? If you've seen something in a million times, it doesn't pop. But if you've never seen that, it's going to pop.
I'd like to come back to talk a little bit about popping in print. You spoke a little bit about translating RGB colours into CMYK. So something like, I think you mentioned a lilac. Would that be less effective in print because different inks have to mix to create that and it becomes a muddier colour? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, often,
I would say it's more like just the fact that if you've got a colour that's developed and created for a screen, and a screen has essentially got a massive light shining directly into your face, it's going to have a brightness and a vibrancy that you're never going to create on paper. Because obviously on paper, the light has to come all the way from the sun, yeah? So that's a fair old distance, hit the paper, bounce off the paper and into your eye. So it's just never, ever going to be as bright as a screen.
Yeah, and what colours are we talking about here, really? The big ones are like a sort of, you know, like RGB green.
It's really bright. Like the Microsoft blue, you know, the one where, you know, when you write a link in Word or something and it comes up in that blue.
Yeah, and then pink, like really sort of...
Pink, sometimes you can get around, because if you do 100% magenta, it's kind of, it's pretty bright.
Yeah.
But purples, you know, when we see it all the time, people have all their, especially like, you know, they have it designed by a more budget design provider, and they've done everything in RGB. Because obviously, like in Photoshop and stuff, a lot of the filters and stuff like that, they won't work in CMYK.
Yeah, yeah.
So they tend to just work in RGB. Or people now maybe just so used to everything being on the online that they don't consider that, you know, you need it CMYK. And some of the changes, some of them you get away with, and some of them it loses everything, just washes out.
Yeah, and it really does take the pop out of an image. Really does sort of just kill it.
But you mentioned ways around it with specific inks. So we're talking about, I suppose, digital print, you get what you get, don't you? That's in the jet.
Yeah.
But with litho printing, where the colours are applied separately, so you could actually buy an ink, have that press set up with that ink.
Yeah.
No other jobs go through that machine.
Yeah, it's just expensive.
It applies less to us. I think it's more sort of art printer, I suppose. And,
right.
But yeah, it's possible.
You can do it, but obviously you'd have to, it would be more expensive, I would say. But yeah, you can get, I'm pretty sure they do like fluoro colours, don't they? So you've got your spot colours for the fluorescence. And I imagine there's like a pretty wide range of those. But those kind of modern, you know, like greens and the purples and the blues and like lilacs and stuff that you do see quite a bit of at the moment. You're never going to get it.
That is an episode in itself, colour. That really is. It's a big one, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
And your entrepreneur who's created his business isn't going to be aware of that until they first come to print something.
Unless they've gone to a, you know, because we get, so people go, oh, you know, my designer sent me the logo files. So you'll go through them. And there's obviously plenty of good designers and they created a logo and they'll send RGB, they'll send CMYK, and like black and white, basically, and they'll send them in all different file formats and all that sort of thing. So you got what you need. The customer's has obviously been told or at least seen a CMYK version. Mm. So, you know, you know it's gonna be kind of fine. Whereas sometimes you'll get, you know, just a load of PNGs. So yeah. You know that.
Again, with experience, you've got to flag it early. Like if you can see that feedback coming when they get it through the, you know, the delivery.
Because some colours you can tell just them, look at right and go, that is not going to like, convert well to CMYK.
It's a big one for photographers. Like, you know, photographers want to get certain colours. Yeah, you have to sort of.
But again, if you're that, because we do stuff for photographers, and obviously, like, at Solo, like, we're good, but we're not like a high-end boutique printers that will spend, you know, run your job one up, run wet proofs, and constantly compare to some sort of, you know, printed copy that the photographer's supplied and tweak all the colours and spend, like, you know, 2 hours doing a make ready before running the print.
Yeah.
So, like, although I get it, I think it's, and I understand that they may not be aware, but if you're going to go, well, these guys seem reasonable and they can turn it round really quick, the reason it's reasonable and gets turned round really quick is because they're not spending 3 hours adjusting all this stuff to make sure your photos come out exactly as they, as you want, as you saw them in Lightroom in RGB on a screen or something. Yeah? Yeah. So it's like a bit of give and take. I think you need to be prepared to go, it's not going to look exactly the same as the thing. Or if it needs to be, then you need like a different service, basically, and a bigger budget, because it takes time, and time is money, right?
Have you ever tried to set in a screen calibration to true, like, print? So like, you're viewing it off the paper. It just looks so dull. Like, like some of those modern Apple Macs, you can set to look like the paper, and you can't even design looking at it because it just looks so knocked back. But it goes to show how much.
Always get one. I mean, me and you were doing the book together. Right?
Yeah.
So me and Matt done the children's book together. It was so helpful just running off colour proofs.
Yeah.
So if you've got the time and the budget, but more importantly, time, because, like, you know, getting a hard copy is not like hella expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. So in my early days of marketing, we used to get wet proofs through all the time. But I imagine with a lot of the jobs that you do, the whole process, amends and sign off, it's all screen based.
Quite often as well, you wouldn't see rarely you'd see the print at the end of it. So you sort of lived in this world of seeing it on screen and customers sign it off, but you don't get
off it goes
to see the final thing quite often. Yeah. It's quite bizarre, you know.
So you might be at that stage halfway through the design, you're working on the screen, and the client asks for what you know is going to be a troublesome colour, and you know that this job is destined for print.
Yeah,
is that a point where you can sort of say to them, like,
you know, "Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah"? If you can see that coming,
send them a screenshot and basically say, and just not even really, it's not much of a solution you can offer depending on the colour.
Yeah,
you know, so
it's just warning them. Really,
it's just saying just so you know that is going to come out like this.
Sometimes
there's not really much you can do about it, because
sometimes you can push it, like, if sometimes when you do a straight conversion from RGB to CMYK, it will kill it, but sometimes you can go back in and maybe try and up the contrast a bit, and
also, weirdly enough, I find that if it's a bitmap, essentially changing Photoshop, because it does it's kinder than Illustrator is. So if you know, open up an image to put in your Illustrator document, and it's RGB, and you paste it onto a CMYK document, it will be a much more severe change than it would be if you opened it up in Photoshop, converted to CMYK, saved it down, and then opened it up in Illustrator.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's little things you go, oh yeah, you know.
So if a client wants something to pop in print, and it's going to be printed CMYK, would you favour the colours that are closer to cyan, magenta, yellow and black? Is it closer to those purer colours,
I think,
the better it turns out?
The closer you can get to having at least one of the colours at 100%, So if you can get one of the colours to 100% and then get your shade and tone from the other ones.
And it depends what colours, certain colours are sitting against, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a bit of a deep one, that, isn't it? It's...
But yeah, if you can, essentially the more, yeah. So if you're doing a grey, say, and you do it all, I don't know, like 5%, then that's going to look, I mean, I know greys aren't going to pop, but you know, just for example, so all the dots are going to be really small and really far apart. So it's going to look extra, like, unsolid in a way. Right. Whereas if you can, I mean, I don't know how you get the grey, but yeah, you know what I mean? So, or say you're doing a purple and you've done it as, you know, like 60% cyan and, you know, like 30% yellow and 30% magenta or something. I don't know if I can remember, but it would be something like that, right? Whereas if you can figure out a way to have 100% cyan and do the rest with the, like, magenta and yellow to get the exact, that'll come out, that'll be more impactful.
That's
because,
like,
it's got that solid colour underneath.
Right. Yeah, that sort of goes into rich blacks as well,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, like, yeah, rich, yeah. So
creating
blacks. Rich black. So a lot of people will do 100% black.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really a dark grey.
You've got to get those.
So if you get some shiners on there, like a, you know, so our standard one where we are is 30-30-30-100.
Right.
And that's also any solid backgrounds.
Yeah, 30 cyan, 30 magenta, 30 yellow.
Yeah.
100K. So, yeah.
Then that'll give a real deep black. And obviously, so if you've got, say, red and white on top of black, but you've only used 100% black and they want the red to stand out more, then they might go, I'll make the red brighter. But if you've got your red at maximum, then there's not much you can do. But what you can do is make the black richer, and that'll have the effect of making the red.
Making the other thing pop.
Great contrast.
One of the popular effects I see recently is that sort of glitching effect, like the prints off register.
Yeah.
And then you get a bit of yellow or magenta or whatever around the side, don't you? It's a bit of a design trope that's about at the minute.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, there's, you know, there is a lot of things you can do to make things pop.
Mm.
And it can go from the colours you use, the layout, the amount of elements on the page, the stock you're using, because obviously you have got the fluorescent stocks, you've got like the pearlescent stuff, haven't you? I mean, weirdly enough, even like craft paper, you know, it's like brown card, which doesn't seem that poppy, but if you kind of get just maybe a one colour job on that, that's like, you know, a fairly bright orange or red or whatever it is,
and then you get that'll
kind of pop, you know, because it'll just be really striking.
And then you get into colours on coated and uncoated.
And then if you put stuff over the, you know, laminate over the top of it, obviously, like, the whole, it just, it's almost not worth discussing, because there's no actual, you know, no actual real answers, not in a world we operate in. You just kind of have to go, well.
But in a job destined for print, there are finish options you could recommend over and above a design.
Oh, sure. You know, you've got your spot UV, you've got your foiling, and then I don't know if it's, you know, we've got that machine for the motion cutting, and when we got it, we got given those samples, and it done like the
face in the paper.
That's right.
Yeah. It was cutting into various.
Yeah, but it was cutting the card at various depths to create imagery. That was proper mad.
Yeah.
So this is a laser cutter that usually goes all the way through, or kiss cuts a sticker.
Yeah.
But actually being used to engrave at various depths.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really
impressive. To create, like, images and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
It looked proper crazy. No, imagine that with a bit of, like, you know, like foiling. I mean, like, foiling on craft paper would look stunning as well.
Because you've got that sort of jarring juxtaposition of something like quite natural and something quite man-made, if you like.
It would though, right? It looked really nice.
Mm.
So there's various things you can recommend, be they
graphic. I think the easiest thing to do is not to have so much stuff on the page. Because anything that pops because it's, you know, like
got
pop art,
space around it,
like
literally
pop art is always just like pretty much one thing, right? In like a limited palette. So, yeah, it's like simplicity can help you as well. Because like Matt was saying earlier, if you've got, you know, a page full of text and images and like all the stuff, then it's, you know, you might better make it bright or busy, but is that the same as popping? I would argue no. And have done, I think.
It's making me think of, is it Pet Shop Boys' album called Pop?
Yeah.
And that's got, the cover's very stark, isn't it? White, and it's just them, and they pop.
I can't picture it. What's it? What's the image?
I think it's the two guys.
On Okay.
I'll look it up later. Anyway, I think it's time to put some numbers on this. So in terms of 1 to 10, clangometer, is it a client clanger? Is it a reasonable request?
Go on, Matt.
Well, again, it depends if they want it, if they're asking for it to pop before they've even, you know, before you've even done a proof or anything else, you know, they might have given you too much stuff. If they're asking for you to make it pop in a response to the design you've just given them, then I stand by the fact that you haven't done it. I don't think you've done your job well enough, personally. Because I think instinctively, maybe it is because I used to design T-shirts. I'm always looking for that pop. So I'm going to base it on that they've seen a proof and they're asking for it to make it pop. So I'm less offended by it because it's not on them, I don't think, as much. So I don't know.
Low number.
Yeah, three.
Three. All right. Rich?
I think behind a mat, I think like a six.
Yeah.
I think we're just going to see it differently.
Yeah, of course.
Is that because you feel that whenever that amend is given to make it pop, that it will result in a not as good result?
I think it's more because it's like, I think what it is, it's like, it's, there's nothing really, they've got nothing else to like give you feedback about, right? Mm-hmm. It's actually fine. But they're kind of, I think it's just a hint of a shrug to it. Yeah, it's like this kind of,
they want to say something.
A little bit like that, a little bit kind of like endless, like endless, like request, you know, like make it pop. It's, I think, because there's no, you can find out, okay, what do you mean? Do you want it to be brighter or, but I just find it kind of not overly helpful, and I think it means they haven't really thought about it. They've just made an assumption and they've kind of just glanced at it and gone, well, it hasn't like changed my world just by looking at it, so therefore it's bad, make it pop.
Or in Matt's view, you've not done your job.
In Matt's view, I've been absolutely terrible. Yeah. No, but I think it's that. I think for me, it's got to be higher because, it's kind of almost code a little bit for...
It's a bit lazy, isn't it?
It's a bit lazy, but I think like the... Oh, it's going to sound really bad, right? But I think it's almost like the expectations are too high. Yeah, right, it's like it's a flyer. No one is going to like really... Yeah, no one is going to kind of be walking down the road and go like, yeah, whoa. Like, it's, the world is not like that. And it's, even if it was, it's not like that anymore. Okay. It's more, now it's more about kind of like familiarity, repetition. Yeah. And like, look, and just like sticking around long enough for people to start going, oh, yeah. Right. Oh, I've seen this poster around. I wonder what that is. I keep seeing this thing.
Yeah, then accumulate.
Yes, rather than like people aren't just going to go like, wow, you know, like crashing their car because they can't stop looking at the amazing,
yeah,
the amazing fly with all its poppiness.
Yeah. Well, that happened with that Wonder Bra advert, didn't they?
Yeah, but people crashing their cars. That's men and boobs, right? Yeah. So that's like, that's almost doesn't count because it's so obvious, you know, which again, like, you know, thankfully. Don't get to, like, when I first started, the amount, I mean, maybe club flyers are still like it, but the amount of club flyers, it's just like, yeah, sexy lady, bevel text.
Yeah.
You know, with like a sparkly background and stuff. Yeah. The amount of those I had to do in like my first few years as a print designer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas, you know, I haven't done it for, you know, at least a decade, if not more.
Mm.
You know, which is like, which is good, right?
Which is good. So what was your score on that one?
It was a 6.
A 6. Okay, so we've got a 6 from Rich and we've got three from Matt, I think.
Three, oh, yeah.
Fair enough.
Do your job. Well,
Results are in. Okay, well, that's it for us. Tune in next time and we'll take another piece of frequently heard feedback and put it on trial. But for now, the court's adjourned. This has been Well, You're the Designer, a Solo Press podcast hosted by me, Danny Powell, with designers Richard Kemp.
Bye.
And Matt Brutti.
Goodbye.
Recorded and produced by Poppy Productions and brought to you by solopress.com.